is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I'm supposed to be your leader. I'm willing to serve you. I'm willing to do everything I can to help you be the best version of yourself. People that have been that to me, those are people that I still call today. People that I might write a letter to today. I've been able to have some of that same impact.
Terante Polite is an assistant coach and recruiting coordinator for the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee women's basketball program, joining the staff in July of 2019. Before joining the Panthers, Polite spent one season at Lincoln College in Lincoln, Illinois, where he led the Lynx to a 16-13 record as the program transitioned from the NJCAA to the NAIA level. Prior to Lincoln, Polite spent four seasons as the girls basketball coach at IMG Academy, located in Bradenton, Florida. While at IMG, Durante was the head coach of the Academy varsity team and assisted with the girls' national and women's postgraduate teams. Before IMG, Durante served one season on the staff at Bryan College, located in Dayton, Tennessee. That followed a two-year stop as the head women's coach and assistant athletic director at Central Christian College of the Bible. During his tenure at CCCB, he led the Lady Saints to the first two winning seasons in school history, compiling 37 victories. Durante also played at CCCB, serving as the team captain from 2007 to 2009. As a player, he was an integral member of the 2008-2009 team that achieved the first 20-win season in men's basketball history, capped with a second-place finish in the ACCA National Tournament. He was named the ACCA National Player of the Year twice and was a two-time NCCAA D2 All-American, two-time NCCAA Academic All-American, as well as holder of the men's basketball single-season scoring record with 833 points.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Mark Anderson from the Owensboro Thoroughbreds of the TBL, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. You'll want to have a notebook handy as you listen to this episode with Durante Polite, women's basketball assistant coach and recruiting coordinator at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Suckle tonight. And we are pleased to welcome Durante Polite, women's basketball assistant coach at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Durante, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I'm excited to be on.
We are thrilled to have you on. Looking forward to talking to you about all the different things that you've been able to do in your career. You've been in many different places. You've had some different roles. You've been in the youth sports business world, which is one that's always interesting to me. So looking forward to diving into all those things. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about the first experiences with the game of basketball.
Man, I've talked about this a lot. And actually today I was talking to my sons in kindergarten. So he had like a little career day thing. And so I was able to talk about, you know, what I do or whatnot. But I was like, man, when I was their age, like I've never, you know, some people they come across, like they find that love for basketball. I've just always loved it. Like I don't remember a time in my life where I didn't love basketball. You know, I've had players that talk about like in the sixth grade, that's when they really, you know, really when it really hit for them. But for me, it's just kind of since I can remember. As a young kid, my grandmother, she worked at a cleaner's, and I remember listening to Carolina. You know, I'm from North Carolina, so I remember to listen to Carolina boys basketball, men's basketball games on the radio, and you know. And saying J.R. Reed, you know, like, you know.
You're just trying to butter him up.
You got me in, Durante.
You're already in. So I'm a Carolina. You got me. I've been a Carolina fan since as long as I can remember, Durante.
And I've been a Carolina fan since the, like, when I was 3 or 4. My dad had taped, like, Jordan's games when they were on CBS. I don't think we have the tapes anymore, but we used to sit and watch his North Carolina games on VHS. And I've got a Tar Heel hat. I always ride with Tar Heels, and there's someone at work that's a huge Duke fan. And let me tell you, how sweet was that to end Coach K's career?
Oh, my goodness. It was great.
Oh, baby.
It was, and I got a lot of love and admiration for Coach K, but boy, I didn't even care that we lost the national title.
Exactly. I know. Isn't that true? That's so true. It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, the Carolina piece of it, I've told this before on the podcast, but when I was a kid, we used to go on vacation to Hilton Head, Island, South Carolina every year. And every year I would make my family, I'm like, we got to pull off the highway in North Carolina. I got to find a Michael Jordan jersey. Like, I was dying to have one. So whatever, I was at Jordan's heyday at Carolina, I was whatever, 11, 12, 13, right in that range. And yeah. And now obviously you can find it anywhere. But at that time,
I bet it pull was a off,
you'd be, yeah, I'd be walking through department stores, trying to find anything. There was always obviously lots of Carolina stuff, but I could never find that Jordan jersey. So yeah, you're off to a good start, Durante, with us.
Yeah, man, Carolina basketball, like my dad played, but I, you know, we had a good rec league system too, that, you know, I look back and I actually hit the guy who, you know, this guy by the name of Gary Cooper. He played at UNC Wilmington. Actually, I think Calipari was there when he was there. And but I wrote him a letter not too long ago just thanking him, because I'm like, man, like his, you know, involvement in recreation for our county. We're from a small county. You know, we have county schools and things like that. Matter of fact, where we're from, everybody calls it the county. Like everybody on the eastern part of the state, when they say the county, they know you're talking about Pamlico County.
That's funny.
And but yeah, like it's just so – it was just something I've always loved. And I played a lot of different sports, but basketball was just that, it's just like that thirst that's never quenched, you know? And so yeah, from as long as I can remember, it's just been something I've always loved. And even now I walk around the house and it's like, I'm dribbling a basketball, you know, I'm shooting a step back or something like that. That's just something I've always loved.
Yeah. It's very cool. When you were a high school player, what do you remember about your summers and what you did to try to get better? What was it like for you? And then thinking about sort of the system that we have today compared to how you grew up.
So, man, if I'm honest, I kind of look back on my high school years with some regret. You know, my summers were big. Like I was better in the summer than I was in the year. And a lot of that is because all I did in the summer was play basketball. You know, whereas during the year, you know, I played football. So a lot of times I went into basketball season hurt. You know, I played baseball, I ran track. But in the summers, you know, I'm a country boy. So, you know, we got a goal outside and I'm just outside shooting like all the time. You know, I would go to camps. I would go to Carolina camp. We had a team camp we would go to. Pfeiffer University had a nice solid team camp that we would go to. But really, it was just time in the yard. And just working. And I remember like going to college campuses and things like that for like, sometimes it was academic camp, but I would always make my way to the rec center. And it was like, man, can I get run with these college guys? Like when I go back the next day, can I get like, will they pick me up? Like I know the first day I ain't gonna get picked up, but the second day, can I get picked up? Can I get a compliment, you know, from a college guy to be like, hey man, young boy can go. So really it was just that. And I wish I did more of that, you know, like looking back when you talk about like things you wish you could have done differently. I wish I'd done more of that during the year. You know, I wish, you know, listening to Pat's episode, I wish I had talked to the janitor to try to, you know, get in and get those extra reps in throughout the course of the year and things like that. But you know, where I was from, there was, like, I never even knew what travel ball was. I had a cousin that, you know, at the time we thought it was crazy that she was going to Kinston, North Carolina to be a part of a travel ball team. You know, like, it didn't even register where we were from. But those are some of my best times. And then I had friends, you know, we would travel to different gyms too. So that was pretty cool. And, this guy that I used to play against from a local county, his father was like, "Hey, I want Durante to come play with us." And so really the most of what we did, we would play as high school kids against in grown men tournaments. And you learn a lot doing stuff like
sure.
that.
But it
was
sure.
but he was forward thinking of like, "Hey, I want to get y'all playing against grown men, you know, because y'all gonna have to learn how to play." So that's kind of the basis of it. Like, not really super organized, just kind of really that love for the game type feel. And I think now you want to try to get a type of balance, and that's the best way to go about it. If you can get that true love of the game type feel along with some of the organized stuff that we got going on, I think you can get a pretty solid, you know, foundation as a basketball player.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I think that talked to a lot of guys on here, we've had conversations about sort of the difference in the way that players grew up in the past and how they try to improve and the pickup basketball scene and that kind of thing, and mm-hmm. how there was really, you didn't have AAU, you didn't have the travel, and then now you have so much more access to gyms, you have so much more access to coaching as a young player, mm-hmm. but yet kids miss out on that opportunity. I think it's interesting that you sort of had a combination of an organized team, but then you're going to play against grown men. Because I always say that playing against guys that were much older than me and bigger than me and stronger than me when I was 14, 15, 16 years old, like, I always feel like that had a really big role to play in my development. And yet kids today miss out on that. So you kind of had a little hybrid model where you mm-hmm. had an organized team, but then you were getting a chance to play against grown men, which a lot of kids today just don't get that opportunity. They spend a lot of time playing with their kids, kids their own age. And I think one of the things that's interesting too is with you being on the women's side of coaching, there's no doubt, I have two daughters, there is no doubt in my mind that the system that we have today for boys, I got some questions about how much better, worse. There's good and bad to both sides of it, I think, on the mm-hmm. boys' side, because I love the way I grew up in the game,
right,
with more pickup and me working on my game on my own. And I would have loved the AAU scene as well. But I think on the girls' side, you look at the opportunities that women have and girls have to play the game today compared to what it was like when I was growing up in the late 70s, early 80s. I mean, it's not even comparable. The opportunity for women and girls in the game is just so much greater because of the system we have today.
Indeed. And, you know, I think Title IX had a lot to do with that. You know, yep. Being around the women's game, you know, we had this Title IX series here at UW-Milwaukee, and you had some of the older players, or even just our supporters that we have that are from that generation of when things first started, and they are so happy for Title IX. And so, yeah, it's been big. And now, like you said, opportunities are bigger and better than ever, where you're, you know, seeing people from small towns kind of like getting people recruited and going off to JUCO. And even if it's just JUCO, you know, I grew from a town, come from a town where, you know, you didn't have people really going anywhere. And now those opportunities seem like they're happening more and more than ever. And it is nice on the women's side. And the fact, you know, the amount of scholarships we get, especially at the Division I level, it's pretty cool to see.
Absolutely. Yeah. There was no possible way back in the era when I grew up that girls had the same opportunity to mm-hmm. play that they have today. And so for my own daughters, I'm thankful that they grew up in this era to be able to have access Indeed. To some of the same things that male players have always had access to. And I just think that it's been tremendous for the growth of the women's game, is just to be able to have all that access and coaching and all those kinds of things that it just didn't have access to in the past. I think that's really something that's been a positive for women. When you look back on your high school basketball career, do you have a favorite memory that stands out?
Ooh. My favorite memory, I would say, is probably my sophomore year. So my sophomore year, actually I got two if I have time to tell.
Sure, go for it, man.
I would say my sophomore year, I was the youngest player on the team. Going into my sophomore year, my coach was like, "You're not playing JV, you're going to play varsity, and you're not going to start. And he was like, but it's not about who starts the games. It's about who ends games, who finishes the game. And so for the year, I came off the bench. And that sophomore, you know, we all have pride about our senior class. But my sophomore year, that senior class, they were like grown men. Like, I mean, we we went to regionals in football. Like, we were one game away from the state title. Basketball, we went, like, I think we finished in the final eight. Track, won the state championship. Baseball, went to the regional finals. So it was like that senior class was crazy. But on our way to the in the playoffs, I never forget, it was a game. It was kind of looking dicey. We had people, you know, upperclassmen on the bench. And I don't know if it was like the third or fourth quarter, but we was on the road. And I remember telling one of my seniors, I was like, hey, like, look for me, look for me. And I wasn't known as a shooter. You know, I was really the backup point guard. And he came down, he found me, boom, I cashed one out. And then we come back down again. I'm like, look for me. He found me again. I cashed another one out. Third time, came back down again, and then this is just who I am. I raised up to shoot it, and then I fired a pass down to a post player, and he got fouled. And I think I came out a little bit after that. And it's so funny, like, just to have people in their different philosophies. But my head coach was like, hey, great job. Way to find Mitchell on that pass. You know, I turned down that third three. The assistant coach who was like a head coach for the men's program years ago, he was like, man, don't you ever stop shooting the ball when you hit like that. So that's just one of my favorite memories of just kind of like trusting yourself, you know, and hitting big shots in a big game. And we end up winning like right at the buzzer. And then I think the other moment that reached out my senior year, and we didn't handle our business like we should have, because my last game, it really should have been like a regional final game against a team, Plymouth. And they were a really good team. I think we had lost to them earlier in the year, but we shouldn't have had to play that early in the playoffs. We end up losing the conference tournament. We should have been the 1-2 seeded. I think we end up meeting them as like a 4 seed or something. And we were down by 11 with like a minute and a half left to go. And I remember looking up at the clock like, man, this could be it. And I just came down, hit like a volleyball line three, you know, and it's just a fouling game. So we fouling. Then I come down, I hit like another volleyball line three. And I think we scored 20 points in that last minute and a half and end up losing by like one. And, you know, I'm thinking like all the emotion is going to be there. And it was one of the times where I was like, I didn't have any tears because I felt like we fought. Like, we did everything that we can do. There was no regret, you know. And I think that was a big lesson for me that I can be honest with my team about now when I talk to them. I said, really what you're trying to achieve out of this thing is like no regret. Like, you might not get everything that you want to get, but you'll find that when you've done everything you could do, there is a level of satisfaction there. And when you don't have the regret, then you can kind of move on and not have something nagging at you. So those are like probably like the two top moments that I have when I think back on my high school career.
Yeah, that's well said. And I think it's a good lesson as a coach to be able to pass on to your players that, man, look, if you can leave it all out there on the floor and you can walk off the court with your chin up and your head held high, that there's something to be said for that. And obviously we all like to win games. And right. Ultimately, especially at the college level where you are, that's how you're judged. But right. at the same time, right, you're trying to pass along lessons that your players can use, not just in the moment, but that they can use for the rest of their life. And clearly, if you can get somebody to put forth their full effort in whatever it is that they're doing, whether that's with their family or their job or mm-hmm. their team, whatever, then you've really done something and you've really had an impact on their life. So I think that's a great lesson that you were able to take early, and obviously, you know, continues to impact you today. As you're finishing up with high school, I know that just from reading your bio and taking a look at kind of what you did, that you had sort of a unique college experience in terms of where you went and what the timeline was. So fill us in a little bit about sort of your process of how you ended up playing some college basketball, and just kind of take us through the educational process for you at college.
Man, my story is far from traditional. You know, so again, I didn't get like heavily recruited for basketball or anything like that. I went to, I want to say it's this program, it's called Networks. And so I ended up making this team for North Carolina. This is like probably the spring right before my graduation. And we go off, we play against all these teams from another state. We're coached by college coaches, like Division III coaches and whatnot. And I had some, you know, kind of like whispering some opportunities that I probably could have pursued. But I'm like, you know, I want to try to go D1. Like I didn't at the time. If I think back, like how I think about basketball now, I probably would have tried to pursue a junior college option. But at the time, you thought about junior college as like for those who didn't have good grades. And I had great grades, you know. And so I'm thinking, you know what, I'm going to go Division I and then try to walk onto a team. That was kind of my mindset. So, but I was also really good in track. And so I won the state championship in the 400 my junior year of high school. I finished runner-up my senior year and won states and a couple different other events too. So
wow.
My track coach, you know, had gotten in touch with the coaches from North Carolina A&T. And next thing you know, I talked to them and now I'm walking onto the track program. And so, you know, I did that. And one thing I found out about track, because I did not like track in high school. It was just fun. Like I did it. I was good at it. And it was fun because we won. You know, we won two state championships as a team. And then my senior year, we were runner up to a team that had dropped down in the division. So they were up a division the year before. The next year they dropped down. They ended up winning. So we would have won. Almost could have won it 3 years in a row. So, but what I found out about track, when you get to high college, it's like, you better love it because it is a lot of pain.
That is look at man, it's running. Like I always say, like track, look, like I get, to some degree, this is what I always say about track. I actually coached a year of track at the school where I'm at. I was an assistant actually for a couple of years and I was the head coach for a year. So, I mean, I get it to some degree, but then part of me is like, man, like it's just. Like you're running, man. Like that's training. That's training for another sport, man. That's not a sport in and of itself, but it will be fun.
Mike and I don't agree on this. Let me tell you, Durante, I coach cross country. I used to run cross. I ran cross country in high school to stay in shape for basketball. That's why I did it. And I felt it made me better because it made me faster. So
well, see, but that's how I look at it. Like to me, it's a means to an end as opposed to the end itself. That's what I'm saying.
Tell the girl that I coached middle school cross country at Umpson Falls got a full ride to Oregon.
Hey, look. Hey, look, more power to anybody who loves it, right? You got to do what you love. I'm just saying when I look at it, part of me feels like, man, that seems like training for other sport. And yet at the same time, I do know it'd be fun if you're fast to be able to just go out and kick somebody's tail on the track, which I'm sure is what you're talking about.
It feels really, really good. But and honestly, you know, where I'm at now, I almost feel like if you do a team sport, you need to do an individual sport to kind of, you know, work, balance some things out. And I really think it needs to be a running sport because I think in running sports, you get a time to like have this self-talk in your head and you kind of learn how to do that. Like if you're running, you know, 3 miles, you kind of you learn how to have this conversation with yourself inside your head. And I think it can translate to when you get into a sport where things kind of happen at a faster pace, but because you've had this practice of self-talk, it can work in that arena a little bit better. But yeah, so I did the track thing. And like I said, you had to work hard just to be okay. Like not even to be good, just to, you know, be okay.
Just to make it through the workouts, right? You had to be in shape just to make it through the workouts.
And so, you know, and the thing is like, so I was on academic scholarship. I did track for like a year and a half. I think I was going to try to, I did a year, well, I did one summer at UNCW. I was going to try to walk onto the team down there. But then my dean of the School of Business at North Carolina A&T, like he heard his name, he's passed away now, Christ the Craig, but he reached out and was like, hey, what you doing? Like he heard I was about to leave North Carolina A&T. And I just kind of told him, he was like, man, come on back here. I'll work something out. So he got me an opportunity to walk onto the team. And I would say this is probably like one of the biggest regrets in my life. I kind of blew the opportunity. Like I kind of, excuse my language, but I feel like I punked out. You know what I mean? Where, you know, I was grinding. I was up early in the morning, all that type of stuff. And then I got a chance to see like what the travel schedule was like. And I feel like I kind of just, you know, I backed out. And so that's kind of one that, the rest of my time at North Carolina A&T, I was fighting to try to get the opportunity again. Finally got an opportunity my last year. The Coach Eves, he had a he had been there like a couple of years, so he had like a little tryout, and I performed great. Like I had been like working, because then I learned how, after that moment, I learned how to really work on my craft, where I was, you know, going to the YMCA. I had bought a membership, going to the YMCA 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, have my own lift session, going back to the YMCA later on that night. Like I learned how to work on my craft. And so had this opportunity, and I did very well. He called all of us up at the end. He chose two dudes. Both of them were like 6'5". You know, I'm you know, 5'10" and some change. And but he looked at me and said, "Durante, you probably," he's like, "you had the best workout." He's like, "but I got 8 guards on scholarship. Like, I just wouldn't have any room for you in practice." And so that was my opportunity. But again, I left the gym that day like, man, I did everything I could do.
Yep.
2 weeks later, he gave the assistant coach, Coach Alfonso Key, gave me a call back and was like, "hey, coach said be at practice today with your gear on." And so I got an opportunity. I basically just practiced with the team. And, you know, but it was cool to be a part of that. And to be honest, man, like, the reason I got to play college basketball is really kind of because of tragedy. Like, I ended up going through like some mental health stuff. I hate to use that as a buzzword, but it was like I went through like some deep depression type stuff, and I ended up not graduating. And I was like I graduated high school with a 4.0 GPA, 4.2 GPA. In college, I was a double major. I had like a 3.433 GPA, doing very well. And I just like hit this wall and wasn't going to class. I mean, it was rough. Yeah. So I didn't graduate. And then during that time, I realized I wanted to like go into like ministry. And I ended up like seeing about this small little Bible college out in Missouri. And I ended up going out there, and come to find out, you know, NCCAA, they didn't have the same eligibility rules. And so it was like, as long as you don't have a degree, you can compete. And I was able to play out there for 2 years, had 2 great years out there. I set the single season scoring record my first year. I think we set the team wins record my second year. And then out of that, that's kind of how my coaching career started, because I ended up, my first coaching job was back there on the women's side.
Were you thinking coaching at any point earlier? I mean,
no.
Was that something that was on your radar? Not at all?
No, not at all. I think I was working at a bank. I lived above his garage, like my first couple years in Delaware.
Okay.
And so Pat and I, we're kind of talking about, you know, all these things we would like to do with basketball. And his wife, Brandy, was like, "okay, why don't y'all stop talking about this and just do it? Like, coach a team at the YMCA this winter and then start doing camps in the summertime." And we were like, "okay." So that's how, like, the Factory Hoops Academy started, where we coached the YMCA team. We called it the Factory Hoops Academy. And then we started doing camps in the summertime. Well, around that same time, my wife and I met her at Bible College. We went to go back to visit. And so a lot of our friends were still out there. And I was like, "well, I can coach at, I can work at a bank out here. You know, I can just, you know, we can go out, be around some of our friends," because they were all still out there. And I talked to the AD, because it's that small college field where, you know, everybody wears different hats. So the AD was also like the dean of women, the English professor, and she was the women's basketball coach. And so in the women's program, they hadn't done well at all. And so I was like, "hey, you know, Sarah and I we're thinking about coming back out here. If I came back out here, I would love to help out with the team." And she said, "if you came back out here, I'd make you my coach." And that was the first time, like, I really hadn't thought about like really coaching, you know. And even throughout the year, I wasn't sure if this is really what I wanted to do. I love the training aspect of it, but I wasn't sure about the coaching aspect of it. And then at the end of the year, I was like, "man, I love this, because you can train them and then use it." Yeah, you know, like,
right. Yeah, you get to see it come to fruition, right?
Right, right. Whereas, you know, you training people, but the coach might not use some of the things that, or might not need some of the things that you've been working on. Whereas, like, I can train this player directly and then be able to see them be able to use it how I think they should be able to use it. So yeah, it wasn't until the end of that first year where I was like, "oh, I'm hooked. Like, this is what I want to do."
What was something that in that first year, when you think back to that time, what's something that you think you were pretty good at from a coaching standpoint right out of the gate? What do you feel like you were you were pretty good at?
Recognizing mistakes, like my own mistakes.
Yeah, I hear you. There you go.
It was kind of like, oh, probably, you know, like you know, I remember playing in this guarantee game. We were playing a Division II. It was a guarantee game. We threw a zone on them, you know, the last like 10 minutes of the first half. You know, I think we're down 2 at halftime. And coming out of half, I stayed in the zone and they ate that mess up. And I was like, oh, I probably should have switched it. You know, I probably should have realized that the whole halftime speech was going to be about how they can, you know, eat the zone up. So I think I just had small moments like that where like I was green, but like I recognized those mistakes pretty quickly. And I was able, you know, the next game, so the next game after a timeout, I'm switching up, even if it's just for 1 or 2 possessions, I'm switching up the defense or something like that, just to kind of, you know, keep the coach off their game plan. So I think that was probably the biggest thing. Just I learned quickly from mistakes that were made.
Coaching women, was that something that came naturally to you? Was that something that felt unnatural a little bit at the beginning? Just what was your thought process as you went into it coaching on the women's side? Because obviously as a male player, your experiences with male teams and male coaches for the most part, I'm sure. So when you start thinking about that women's side of it, what was that first year like for you in terms of, was there any adjustments? Just how'd you go about acclimating yourself to the women's game?
Well, really, you know, I hadn't coached a lot before then. I mean, right. prior to that, there's this guy, Samuel Warren, in Greensboro, North Carolina, who used to work me out. And so I would pay him to work out. And then one time he was like, hey, I got, you know, this AAU program. If you help me coach, you don't have to pay for your workouts. And so I helped coach this AAU program. I helped coach like this public school, this public like public assistance league kids at one point in time. And then that sixth grade YMCA team. So I hadn't had a lot of experience, you know. And really, I just was like, I coach basketball players. That was just kind of my mindset. I think the biggest thing I was big on was just like as a coach, just really being above reproach. And, making sure you're not going in the locker room at the wrong time, you know, making sure you're, you know, knocking on the doors and all of that type of stuff. And I never forget my first year, my point guard. I mean, she hit this big shot. She had like this step back 3 in overtime. I mean, it was crazy. The coach calls the timeout. So she's walking to the bench. And the whole time in my mind, you know, as guys, we smacked each other on the butt.
Right. Yep.
So the whole time in my mind, as she's walking to the bench, you know, I'm thinking like I'm just hyped, you know. She just hit a big shot. So I'm about to like smack her on the butt. And it was like mid-swing, I was like, you don't want to get fired. And I went up to the back, you know, I switched it mid-swing up into the back, you know. And so it was that. It was stuff like that. But I've always felt like I just coach basketball players. Like that's what I coach, you know. And yeah, there's some differences, but I wasn't aware of those differences a whole lot because prior to that, I coached kids, you know, not you know, adults.
Yep. No, that makes total sense. I mean, I think, again, when you come into it inexperienced, probably in some ways was better because you just kind of, this is what it is. It is, right. It is what it is. I don't know anything different.
Right.
When you started putting together your philosophy and thinking about how you wanted to play or what you wanted your teams to look like in that first year, what was that process? Or were you not even thinking about that? Were you just like, hey, I got to figure this out kind of on the fly?
Well, I think not really a lot as far as team building. Like I was blessed with like talent for, you know, that level. I think we broke the wins record. We had the first winning season in school history, won the conference. Really, it was kind of just the mindset. Like, again, I was a pass first point guard. And, you know, actually the best compliment I've ever gotten was from one of my college teammates. And he said he loved playing with me because I got more excited when other people did things well than when I did things well. And so that was just kind of my mindset for coaching. Like, I want us to have a versatile team. And so when I took the job, the point guard the year before, she led like the NCCAA in scoring, but they didn't win any games. And so we brought in a player who her first year, I think she was conference player of the year. She was region player of the year. And I didn't have to draw up any plays for her because she like set her high as a 5'6" guard. She set a high school rebounding record, you know. So, but really, it was just about how I wanted to play. I wanted to play with being versatile. That everybody on the court is a threat. And really, I remember a veteran coach in our conference who his team was used to winning a conference. He says, "Man, it's hard to prepare for you guys because normally at this level, you only got one, maybe two players to worry about, but we have to worry about every player that you have on the court." And so really, that was kind of all I knew from the beginning. I wanted ball movement. I credit a lot to my high school coach, Earl Sadler, and with that, like just and then just that's who I was as a player, like getting the ball moving, making easier plays for other people. So really, that was kind of all I had.
Right. I mean, you got to go with what your experience is, right? Right. I mean, you can only take from what you know. I think that's one of the things, right, as a young coach that we've talked about on the podcast numerous times, where when you're a young coach, a lot of what you do is based off of who you were as a player and what your high school coaches and what your college coaches, if you were fortunate enough to have a college career, that's kind of what you do. It's, you know, you realize you maybe think you know more at those younger ages, and then as you get older and you start to realize and you get exposed to lots of other people who have just tremendous basketball minds, and you see everything that's out there that you realize, like, yeah, I didn't know nearly as much as I thought I did. It's hard though. It's hard when you're young. You don't often realize you gotta get that life experience and that wisdom to be able to kind of understand. And there are some guys that get it right out of the gate and understand how much time they have to put in and to learn the game. But I think a lot of them fall into the category like I was, where it was just kind of like, hey, I was a good player, so that must mean I'm going to be a good coach, which obviously doesn't translate.
Doesn't always translate.
It does not always translate. So, all right. So you're there for 2 years, and then from there you get an opportunity to go to Bryan. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Talk a little bit about how that comes your way.
Man, that was so, you know, I'm a believer, you know, and it just seems like, I don't know, man, it seems like every step, you know, I feel like God has just kind of had some way into that. And so I had 2 years at Central. I'm kind of in like this kind of stage where I've talked to some older coaches that were in the NCCAA. And, you know, I had a coach who's like, hey, Durante, if you want to coach scholarship basketball, like you might want to get out sooner than later. And so I was just kind of like, you know, I don't know. And one day I applied for a job at Bryan College. The only reason I applied for the job is because I didn't have to fill out the application. I was tired of filling out applications, you know, which, you know, in this business, it's not really how you get jobs anyway.
Right, for sure. Yep.
I was green. I didn't know. So, but I just had to send in a cover letter and a resume. So I sent it in, and I think, you know, Coach Smith called me. No, he didn't call me. One of my references called me that same day. And it was my college coach who had moved on to another school. And so he was like, hey, so you're applying for the Bryan College job? I was like, they called you already? He says, well, here's the deal. I was supposed to have already told you about the job. Coach Smith had reached out to see if I knew anybody. I mentioned you, but I hadn't had a chance to tell you yet. And he reached out to me, said, hey, thanks for telling Durante about the job. But, you know, and I had never heard of Bryan College before, never heard of Jason Smith. You know, I had just happened to look on the NAIA website, you know, so that was just crazy. So when Coach Smith called me the next day, basically it was my job to turn down. And I took it. I was in a full time position at Central. My first year at Central, I was on a stipend. I think I went out there for like $3,000. That's it. Like, and had to piece some stuff together to get things to work. My second year, they put me on full-time salary, but it was I had another full-time role, and then basketball was tacked on the end of that.
Yep.
Well, at Bryan, I took a part-time job at Bryan because of the opportunity. And it was awesome. Like, I learned so much from Coach Smith. I always told him, I was like, man, Coach, because at Central, both years, I got to the regional championship game and I lost, and it was that was the game to go to nationals. And I told Coach, I said, Coach Smith, man, if I had your defense, like when I was at Central, I'd have been to that national tournament, you know? So, but yeah, it was great. You know, Coach Smith was awesome. Like I said, I learned a lot from him, and he just like, he let me go. Like, he just was like, you know, he's like, I think I got the best assistant coach in the country, you know? And, you know, I worked a lot with the skills development. And so I kind of, you know, that was kind of more of my time there with him. And so I was able to kind of really hone in on those things, working with all different positions. So yeah, it was just great. It was great. And, you know, I was only there for 1 year, but, you know, Coach Smith, you know, a couple of years after I left, he just blew that thing out the water. And, you know, he won like over 100 games in like 3 years. Like, so great time there. And I tell people, like, some of my coaching heroes are people that other people have never even heard of. And Coach yep. Smith definitely, like, he falls into that category.
Was it easy to transition from being a head coach as your first experience and then go to being an assistant? Because obviously the role changes where as right. the head coach, you're making all the decisions and you have the final say. And once you're an assistant, that ability to do that goes away. So was that a big adjustment for you? Or was that something that you kind of adapted to pretty quickly just because that's just the way it was?
Yeah, I think I adapted to it quickly because I was a head coach. So I had like this understanding that at the end of the night, he got to be okay with the decisions that were made.
Right.
You know? And so I, you know, there's this, of course, like, you know, I was the point guard, you know, all my life, you know, football, I was quarterback, you know what I mean? So of course, like there are like these kind of leadership, you know, type qualities that I have that, you know, where you would like to have made the decision here or there, but it's nothing I didn't really struggle with. I actually went into the year thinking like, well, maybe this is like, I'm going to try to give this assistant coach thing a go and see if like, this might be like my role. Like this might be what it is. And so, yeah, I was able to kind of lock into not having to worry about the bigger things. So that's kind of how I looked at it. Like gave me an opportunity to kind of dive in on some of the details without having to worry about a lot of the bigger aspects of running a program.
Do you think that time as an assistant helped you in your next couple of stops where you went back to being the head coach in terms of understanding sort of the mindset of an assistant and how you could better help your assistant coaches to not only improve themselves, but also to better help them to be able to help your program, if that question makes sense?
Yeah. So if I'm 100% honest, so when I was at Central, and again, this is why I appreciate my experience, I was the head coach, assistant coach, the manager, you know, like the equipment person, the SID, yep, you know, you. I was writing my own articles, answering my own quotes, you know, all of that type of stuff. But the AD, she would like be my assistant for games and she traveled with me and things like that, you know, but as far as practice, like all that was on my own. So even when I left to go to IMG, when I was an assistant for like our top national team, but then I ran my own team. And even at Bryan, I was like the head JV coach. But when I was at IMG, I didn't really have an assistant. You know, we helped each other out. We worked each other's, you know, on the bench and things like that. But I will say I did learn at IMG to kind of ask for, you know, suggestions and things like that. Whereas when I was at Central, she helped me in other roles, being able to deal with, you know, female athletes and kind of helped me to understand some things that I might not have understood, but she didn't like, it wasn't really like a basketball type thing. Whereas when I got to IMG, you know, I had real basketball minds that were there. And I was more, I think I was better able to kind of seek out their opinion on certain things because I wanted, you know, my opinion to kind of be valued when I was at, and I thought I was a resource and my opinion was valued when I was at Bryan. And so I wanted to be able to kind of do that. And I got opportunities to do that once I got to IMG.
The first training camp, Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine, will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
Did your wife know what she was signing up for with all this coaching?
Oh, man. She the best. Like, I wouldn't be in this if it wasn't for her. Because, again, like, this coaching life is just tough. Like,
yep.
We see the glitz and the glamour of, like, those at the top programs and things like that. But, again, you're talking about I leave a full-time job. First of all, I go all the way across the country on $3,000. And she like, all right, let's roll. You know what I mean? But, again, even that was just crazy because we go out there. She had applied for this job. We had on the application it said, you got to go turn it in person. Like, you can't. But we weren't in Missouri yet, you know?
Right.
So she sent in the mail. We hadn't heard anything from it. We get to Missouri on a Sunday. Monday, she gets a phone call about the job, about an interview. Tuesday, she interviews. Thursday, she starts working. You know what I mean? So that's when I say, when I talk about, like, I can't separate my life from my faith. But she's been awesome. And even when we were at Bryan, I never forget, I got my master's degree, which, you know, I'm not totally sure I should have done that. But, you know, in all the applications, it says bachelor's required, master's preferred. And I had a cool master's program, so I am cool with that. But I remember getting my master's degree and working in a warehouse of minimum wage the next day because my program, my time at Bryan was just part time.
Yep.
And I remember my second daughter is on the way and thinking like, you know, maybe I need to get out of this. I was gonna try to be a volunteer at UTC at Chattanooga and work, you know, at a bank full time. And my wife was like, this is what we do. Like, nah, something gonna work out. Like, this is what we do. And man, like a few months later, I got the job at IMG, which is actually my first full time coaching job.
How do you get that? What's the connection there? How do you find out about it? What's going on there? Because we just had a couple guys on from IMG, Jeremy Schiller, who I don't think was there when you were there because he just got the job there in the last year or two. But we also had Daniel Santiago.
Oh, that's my guy.
Yeah, so we just had Daniel on. His episode hasn't gone out yet, but it should. I'm thinking it's probably going to go out next week. So yeah, so just talking to them a little bit about the experience there, what it's like. So just tell me how you got there.
Well, first I got to say, Daniel Santiago is my guy. Like, that's such a good dude. So I'm excited to hear that episode. But Mike, it's the same old, same old. I don't know how I got that job at IMG. The only thing I can say is God. That's all I can say. And here's the crazy thing. I talk about timing. If that job had been open in like May, I wouldn't have applied for it because all I saw was high school. That's all I thought of. And I did not want to be a high school coach. And I'm gonna be honest, it's parents. Like, that's why I didn't want to be a high school coach.
Yeah, understood.
But August comes around and it says full time. And at the time, you know, I thought like maybe at Bryan, they would stack two positions together for me, but they were adamant they weren't going to do that. So August turns around. I hit a friend up who was in Florida. I was like, IMG. He was like, do it. So I applied for it. So when I finally get a call, and at the time, Kenny Natt was the director. And, you know, I looked up Coach Nat's information. He played in the NBA. He yep. coached in the NBA. And I said, man, I'm not getting this job. Like, that's what I said. There's no way I'm getting this job. And so then I talked to Coach Nat. He said, Coach Daly, she's going to give you a call, this, that, and other. So then I go look up, you know, Coach Shell Daly's resume. And she, you know, played at Texas under Jody Conrad, you know, and, you know, coached in the WNBA, you know, coached in the SEC. In three different places. And I said, there's no way I'm getting this job. There's no way I'm getting this job. No one's ever heard of little old Durante Polite. And I got an interview. Even the interview, my plane got delayed. And, you know, almost thought the flight was going to get canceled. I got into Bradenton like 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I interviewed and I ended up, I got the offer like a week later. Me and my wife cried in the living room. And it was such a phenomenal experience to be there. But you know, again, I can't take any credit, man. The whole way through, I'm thinking there's no way I'm getting this job. And, you know, I end up getting it.
All right. So when you're there, just give people an idea of what the environment's like. Because I know we talked to Jeremy, we talked to Daniel a little bit about just how unique of an environment it is in terms of the resources that you have. And just tell us a little bit about your experience coaching there, which levels you coached at, and what it was like coaching a team there.
Yeah. And so here's how I describe IMG. And I think I can do this because I used to work there, so I'm not breaking any NCAA rules or anything like that. Like, you know how you... You like say you're about to go on vacation, you take a look at the hotel that you're about to go stay at, right? And you see the pictures and you're like, oh man, the hotel is nice, right? You get to the hotel and it's still nice, but it's not as nice as the pictures, right? You know?
Yep.
IMG, you take a look at everything, like, oh man, this is crazy. Like, this look really nice. You get to IMG and it's even better in person than what you saw with the pictures and stuff online. Like, it's just insane. But it was, it's just an incredible experience. And I think there's just this level of really like this level of just expectation and this level of competitiveness where like you almost to go to IMG and not get better. And I believe this not just from like the player student athlete standpoint, but also from a coaching standpoint. To go there and to not improve in your craft, you would actually have to actively work against, you know.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, because it's like you just in this atmosphere. Like, say, if you're a basketball player, well, you with these other basketball players that's trying to go get it, right? Division one, Division two, Division three, whatever. They trying to go get it. Well, you're in the dorms. Your friend is in soccer, and guess what? They trying to go get it too. They trying to make the national team. You got the football player. He trying to go get it. You know, you got the golfer. They might go pro next year. Like, it's just this. And then from a coaching standpoint, you got, you know, NBA, you got Power Five, you got international experience. Like, it's so much. You know, you got Daniel Santiago, who was on the team at Puerto Rico, who beat Team USA. Like, it's just so much that, like, you would actually have to actively work against, and you still might improve trying to like actively work against improving. You still might end up improving because if it's just so much there, it's nothing like it.
I know Jeremy talked a little bit about just being able to walk down the hall and ask four or five different people questions or bumping into somebody on the court. And all of a sudden you're getting into a coaching discussion and try to say, hey, okay, we got to work on this particular thing. Or what do you think about this particular mm-hmm. way that we're reading the pick and roll or whatever it might be? And he just said that he feels like it was just an incredible, and it is for him an incredible experience to be able to have all those, as you said, those mentors and people who are working at all those different levels to be able to have that experience. You mentioned, hey, I don't want to be a high school coach because I got to deal with parents, right? So IMG, not a traditional high school environment. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. what was it in terms of parents? What was that like for you? Because again, it's not traditional, but yet people are in a lot of cases paying a lot of money to go to IMG. So
yep.
parents are clearly invested mm-hmm. in their children's athletic experience. So what was the parent situation like for you there?
It was, I think for the most part, it was good because for me, with that boarding element, I felt like I was still in college. I felt like I operated like I was at a small college. You know, that's kind of how I felt. Yes, parents more involved as they should be, like as you would expect. But I think even for as parents, allowing your child to go to a place like IMG, I think there's a little bit of a different mindset there too. That you're kind of dealing with parents who think about things a little bit differently than what you might experience at the local public high school or whatnot.
Yeah.
So I had, you know, for the most part, I had great relationships with my parents. And then really the biggest thing, and I'm not trying to, I don't want to knock anyone, but I think the biggest thing with high school is that, you know, your coach is around you for a shorter period of time and then they give you one message. But when you go home, that parent could be given a totally different message. Whereas at IMG, it ain't a lot of going home, you
right.
know, so
yeah.
they're getting this message. And then not only are they getting it from me, they're getting it from the strength and conditioning coach. They're getting it from the mental coach as well. And then they see their athletes around them And then also, I think there is more, probably more of a level of trust from parents, at least initially anyway, because of a lot of times who the coaches are, you know, as far as the level of coaches and what you would expect at an IMG Academy. So I had great relationships with parents, like I said, for the most part. And, you know, and then I had a coach, you know, that, you know, Coach Daly, she kind of, you know, held her own in the coaching world or whatnot. So, I care for my athletes, and I think my parents understood that. And so I was going back to meet with teachers, you know, even though things that they might have been doing if they were there, I was going to do that. And I was all about the holistic athlete, not just them being a basketball player, but them as a person, them in academics as well. So I think that helped me in my experience with my parents.
Yeah, for sure. I could see where the environment itself lends itself to parents having a trust factor in what's going on there. You have to get past whatever trust issues you might have going into it. You obviously, as a parent, have to get past that in order to send your child there in the first place. So I'm sure that does help. Now, on the other side of it, when you're bringing together players from all over the country and you're putting them on different teams, and then all of a sudden, okay, you got your 12 girls in front of you, how do you go about building a team culture and getting that team to bond together? It's not like, again, if you're at your local public high school and maybe those girls have played together since they were in the third grade, here you're talking about girls that are coming together from all over the country that haven't don't even know each other. And now you've got to try to build a cohesive team. So how'd you go about doing that during your tenure there at IMG?
You know, I think I probably got a lot better at it. Year 3 and 4 were like probably my big growth years when it came to that. I think first year, I was, you know, kind of, I got the job kind of late in November. So I got thrown right into the fire. It's like, I got the job the next week. We were in California for a week, you know, and then we were home for a little bit. Then we're like in DC for a week, you know? So, I was kind of thrown in the fire, and the program was kind of in the middle of like this growth stage. So it was kind of, you know, like we had our top team, and then we had some players that like played with the top team, and then we kind of carved out a schedule for some of the other players. We hit this big growth my second year, and again, it was still, we were trying to figure things out as far as, you know, how we were doing it. We brought on our first post-grad program. But my third year, I kind of like took ownership of the younger group, you know, or even that group that was like less talented. I was like, this is my group, and I'm going to develop my time. I'm going to be intentional with my time with them, as opposed to spending more time with the top team. And I really grew, you know, my master's degree was, I did the positive coaching program at the University of Missouri. And I really just began to dive into like my core values and just kind of, you know, wanted to make those things, to build a culture, and wanted my team to have a particular culture, not just us being thrown together type deal. And we have mental conditioning coaches, and I really like dove into that because I was into the sports psychology because that was part of my master's degree. And I think I began to really just dive in on those core values. And we would do a get together at the beginning of the year as a team. And I would be a part of our mental conditioning sessions that they did as a team. And it was just big on, okay, this is who we're going to be, who we going to be as a program, no matter what part of the country that you're from. And I think also a big thing was I wanted to teach them how to play basketball instead of like running a bunch of plays. And so that's when I got into the European ball screen and just like, all right, I get to have some control as a coach because it's a continuity. But then they get to have some control, some autonomy as a player, because as they learn the reads, they can make the reads. And so all of that kind of happened at the same time, learning about giving players autonomy and things like that, where I begin to help them make decisions, allow them to make particular decisions. I had a situation where for captains, they had to like, I did like a job application, and they had to apply for it to become a captain. And so, yeah, I really, those years were really foundational for me. And I will tell you, working with Lindsay Hamilton, who is one of the mental coaches there at IMG Academy, she was big in kind of helping me just talking me through, coaching me through building my philosophy and actually, you know, allowing that to flow through the program.
Then your next stop is Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
As a head coach. You go there for 1 year. Talk about the decision to leave IMG, because obviously seems like it was a place that you could flourish and it was a place that had tons of resources. So I'm assuming that your desire to get back to the college level is what prompted you to leave IMG and take this opportunity at Lincoln.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really what it came down to, get back to the college level. You know, I kind of at the time I just kind of felt like, because again, we're competitors, right? And so I felt like I was kind of like hitting the ceiling at IMG. And I wanted to kind of challenge myself. I wanted to take everything that I had learned, especially again over those last 2 years at IMG, and now go apply that to a program, to a college program. So like, I feel like it's like you go and say you get beat, but you lose to somebody early in the summer. And so you go and you work on your game, You're trying to go back and see them, you know, towards the end of the summer. Like, I'm trying, okay, now I'm ready to play because I got some things with me. So that's kind of how I felt going back to Lincoln. And to be honest, the transition from IMG to Lincoln was seamless because IMG, we just really operated like it was a college. And so my 1 year at Lincoln was awesome. You know, it was some trouble. They were a JUCO transitioning to a 4-year school. So JUCO transitioning to NAIA, there was some grade things going on. So I didn't have my best player the first half of the season. And you know, I had to learn. They came off a great year the year before. But they had some players to leave, you know, the coach left and everything. And so I remember my first game, like we had some injuries, we were down on some numbers, and I knew we just weren't going to be ready. And I knew it wasn't going to be what everybody was used to from the year before, because they had like, they won 25 games and whatnot. And we just kind of got blown off the floor. But I knew it was going to happen because we just weren't ready. But our guys played afterwards, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to go back here and sit in this office. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to sit amongst the crowd and I'm going to take it. Like, I'm not going to hide. And we just kept getting better and better and better and better. And I remember we lost the game like a couple of weeks later, but somebody walking out, it was an older gentleman. He was like, hey, the ladies are looking better and better, you know? And so that was great. Cause I was able to take so much of, who I was as a coach and put it into a program. And honestly, they played a lot differently for me than they did the previous year. And it was a different, you know, I go from IMG, super affluent families, a lot of affluent families, to a lot of families, you know, Lincoln, it was a lot of families. Some of my student athletes, they were the first generation of going to college, you know, first generation college students and things like that. So even just being able to transition to like a totally different world, totally different experience from IMG, was really, really fun. And they were just an awesome group. We didn't have any drama. Like, they were tough personalities because a lot of them from the inner city, but we didn't have drama. You know, it was like no fighting amongst one another. They could snap at each other and not take it the wrong way. And so they were really a special group for me.
When you think about that program and had you stayed, what do you think, as you started to build that first year, what were some of the things that you started to incorporate that you think as that program would have continued to grow, would have made it successful? What were you putting in place in terms of the building blocks that first year?
Well, really, it was a time requirement. It was kind of like, I'm going to require more than you than what you've had required of you before. And so we're going to lift on a regular basis. You're going to have things required of you off the basketball court. Once the season is over, you'll get some time to rest, but then boom, we getting back to it. Like, you gonna commit to this thing. So I think that was a big thing. Just the culture. I had this creed that we would say in the beginning of practice, and really what it came down to was like being a great teammate. And it, you know, it started out by saying, I'm here today to be a good teammate, you know, and then we would have this closing creed of basically saying, hey, I'm still going to be a good teammate when I leave, and I understand my actions and their consequences affect my teammates. So those were just some of those things, just those kind of building block things, and then just the ability to play with one another and play together, play team basketball, and then trust one another. And whether it's from, you know, my top player, I remember at halftime when I did get her back, one time it was at halftime, and I was like, hey, like, the ball is stopping with you right now. I don't need the ball to stop with you. Like, you need to let the ball move. You're going to get opportunities to score on the back end, or you're going to get opportunity to find somebody on the back end. You know, and so seeing her trust me enough to be able to do that and see it go, you know, towards winning basketball. So I think it was just kind of those type of things. And I think we were primed and ready to do something great that next year. Because, again, the next year she was the conference player of the year. So I only had her half the season. Like, that would have been a 20-win season if I have her the whole season. I only had her half of the season. So her with everybody understanding my system, because we practiced at 5:30 in the morning every year, every day that year. And it was because I needed everybody at practice. It was like, this is my first year. And I never forget, like, we had some tension early on, and I was in the back. I knew they weren't ready when I came out. They weren't fully stretched. People had probably just gotten there, because I'm kind of like, hey, you're going to stretch. I'm not going to sit here and watch you stretch. You're going to stretch on your own. And then when I come in, it's time to be ready. And so I remember as a coach, I was ready to, like, just go off. And then I stopped myself and I said, you know what? Listen, I want y'all to understand, us practicing at 5:30 in the morning, it's not me beating my chest to say, you know, we going, why everybody's asleep, we working. And like, it ain't none of that. I just need all of y'all here. I said, so if this is not working for you and y'all want to do it later on at night, we can do that. You know, I don't want to get up 4 o'clock every morning. You know, I'd rather not do that. And they understood. Like, there was, you know, this generation, they need some reasoning behind it. And so they understood. And from there, they bought in, because it wasn't me just trying to tell them what to do. It was like, I just want us to be as good as we can possibly be. I need all of you there for that to happen, because if this person is missing, you know, it's y'all first year understanding the system. Next year, it could be different because y'all understand my system. It could be a little bit different. But this year, everything's new to everyone. I need all of you there. And, you know, I learned those things throughout the course of the year. Just like, again, that autonomy piece, giving them some ownership and letting them, like, understand this is for you. And they ran with that. So the next year, it definitely, I felt like it could have been something. It really, really could have been something.
It sounds like that communication piece is really important, right? That you got to make sure that you're on the same page. I know we've talked to other coaches about the need for this generation of athlete to really want to know why when you're doing something, that being able to explain to them, okay, here's what we're going to do, but it's no longer enough just to say, here's what we're going to do, and you're going to do it because I said so. Now it's, hey, this is what we're going to do, and here's the why behind what we're going to do. And it sounds to me like that was an important part of what you were trying to get done.
It was. And one thing I learned, Mike, was it's important to have a lot of communication with your leaders, especially like during that year, because, again, we started out rough. But I knew we were going to be rough because we couldn't get the practice time that we needed because we had different people out dealing with injuries. But it was kind of keeping that positive communication with my leaders, so that their talk, when I'm not around and they're with the team, they're saying like the same thing. They feeling it too. And so as we were getting better throughout the course of the season, like they were feeling it too. And I think at the end of the year, they were sold. I think they were sold on me as a coach. As a matter of fact, calling them and letting them know that I wasn't going to be back was really tough. Yeah, and I'll never forget one of them said, Coach, why are you leaving us? You know, like, and that stopped me in my tracks. That was hard to answer. But I still have, you know, some good relationships with those young ladies, just being with them for a year.
That's something that I don't think everybody necessarily thinks about when somebody takes a new job, right? That you do have to go back and you have to talk to your players. And no matter whether or not the next opportunity that you're getting is a great opportunity, whether it's from a career standpoint or geographical standpoint, or whatever reason it is that somebody takes a new job, you still have those players that you've gone to battle with for at least a year. And in many cases, you know, a lot more years than that. And to go back and to have those conversations, I'm sure, is incredibly emotional and difficult, because look, if you're doing a great job as a coach, then you're building relationships with those players. Mm-hmm. Obviously not the same level of relationship with every single player, but clearly there's a relationship with all of them. And to be able to go back in and say, hey, I'm moving on to take this next job. And even though rationally your players may be able to understand of, hey, you're getting an opportunity that is better because maybe you're going from an assistant to a head coach, or maybe you're going from a Division II school to a Division I school, or whatever the opportunity may be, they rationally can understand. But emotionally, that's tough. If they have a connection with you, that's tough. That's really tough.
It's tough, man. It's never easy. It's never easy.
So tell us a little bit about the opportunity at UWM. How does that get to you? What does it look like? What's the process? Is there somebody that you know that helps to facilitate it? Just tell us a little bit about the transition.
So this is awesome for, I think, anybody out there that wants to get into like college coaching and probably coaching in general, but definitely at the collegiate level. It's the networking game is big. And so my last year at IMG, that last summer, I went to, this is a guy by the name of Brian Stanchek. He runs this thing called HCTC, the Head Coaching Training Center. And he's an agent.
We've had Brian on.
Oh, you've had Brian on, yeah.
Yep. Great guy.
So Brian Nash, who was the director of basketball at IMG, now he knew Brian and he was like, hey, you should go to this. So I went there and I'm not a big like networking, you know, I'm an introvert. I don't mind being to myself. But I describe it this way. I don't shake a lot of hands, but I like to build with the hands that I do shake. And so I was at this event, a lot of coaches speaking, and my head coach, Kyle Reckless, she was speaking. And in the first 5 minutes, I was like, I could work for her like that, like in the first 5 minutes. So when we had a break session, she's the only person I went up to and like introduced myself and like gave an elevator pitch to. And I was just like, listen, like, I think you're brutally honest. You know, I think you care about your student athletes, and I think I can learn a lot from you. And like, I can work for you. Like, that's basically how the conversation went. I gave it like a 45 second elevator pitch. Well, her and her top assistant, Anya Covington, they were there. So later on that night, I think we kind of met up and, you know, just, you know, had a meal and just talked a little bit. And this is where Kyle is so great. She said, so listen, I don't know a lot about you, but you seem like a pretty nice guy. I'm willing to network and build with you, but you have to lead it. You know, like I'm not going. So that means like if you call, I'll answer. You know, you shoot me a message, I respond. But, you know, I'm not going to lead the effort. You got to lead the effort. And so I got the job at Lincoln a few months later. She had positions open then, but, you know, she ain't know me. Right. So I got the job at Lincoln, and then I traveled up to a practice. And again, she just loves basketball. So I traveled up to a practice, and then we sat afterwards for like an hour and a half, her, myself and her entire staff, and we just kind of talked through a lot of basketball stuff. And so I just stayed in contact throughout the course of the year. And in like the summer of that next year, I see my phone ringing, and I see it's her. And I'm like, well, did I call her something? Did I shoot a text message? Like, what? Why is she calling me? And she was like, I got an assistant that's leaving. Would you be interested? And I was like, yes. but I will say this, Mike, like I never felt like I had to coach at the Division I level to solidify who I am as a coach.
Right.
And first and foremost, it's always protecting my family. And so again, what a lot of people don't understand, when you work at some of these smaller schools, like you might can't afford the health insurance for everybody. And so my wife was kind of on an island. So my prayer was like, man, Lord, we got to, you know, something got to happen. Because I don't want her to, you know, we thought we had it figured out before we got there, and it didn't work out. So she basically had a year without health insurance. And even I tell Coach Rex to this day, I said, you know, if you call me in June and my wife has the health insurance stuff taken care of, I was like, I don't know. It wouldn't have been an easy decision because I'm thinking national tournament the next year, you know, like I'm taking this team. When we go into the national tournament, that's going to look great on my resume, this, that, and the other. But you know what, Mike? We didn't have a national tournament the next year because of COVID. And so to this day, that's just a great lesson to me to be like, always put my family first. Like, I have to put them first and foremost. But that's kind of how it all worked out. I just kind of built that relationship with Coach Rex. And when the time came, she gave me a call.
So what's it been like as you go there? You had always worked in environments. I guess at IMG it was a little bit different. You had a huge staff of people that you could work with. But in your other positions, your coaching staff, when you're coaching a team, it's basically you. And now at the Division I level, obviously you have a whole team of coaches and other support people that are around you and around the team. So what was that like kind of going from, again, being the jack of all trades that I got to kind of have my hand in everything and do everything to going back down to a back down is the wrong way to say it, but just
I know what condensing
your role, condensing the things that you were responsible for. How'd you handle that? And what did that look like for you in that first year at UWM?
So the best way I can describe being here is my first year here, I said it's everything I've ever done is just on steroids. Like, I don't know another better way to explain it. Like, it is everything I've ever done, but boy, it is a lot. And the biggest thing, the biggest adjustment from the in the beginning was just getting a pace, because everything was so new. And so it's like, and I'm trying to move the family and everything. And it's like, okay, we got this community service event that I had no clue about, you know, and then this is going to be the workouts. And then we might have one on this morning. And then we might have this other thing that we got to go do. Oh, now you're going to be recruiting for 4 days. You know, when you come back 6 o'clock in the morning, we got practice. So it was just trying to figure out a pace early on. That was the biggest thing. But I honestly, again, I think life is a lot of it is how you choose to look at it. And I was like, well, man, this is a time where I can like really focus on a fewer amount of details and get more detail oriented in some things. So that's just the kind of way I looked at it. Like, I've always had to kind of like train and develop all positions, which, you know, I love that. I love being able to work with the post players and things like that. But it's given me an opportunity to really kind of be more detail oriented with the guards and the point guard position and things like that. So that's kind of how I went into it. Like, hey, you get to kind of specialize for a little while, something you've never been able to do. and it's been fun. It's been fun. It's been a big challenge. You know, Division I basketball is just really, it's tough to win, period, you know, at any level. But it's really, really tough at this level. The details mean so much, because a lot of times you don't have a clear-cut advantage from just a player standpoint. You know, you playing against a lot of all-state caliber talent, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so those details, they matter so much. But that's kind of how I looked at it. Like, it's an opportunity for me to specialize and to dive in.
Has your role changed in the time that you've been there?
I came in as the recruiting coordinator. I'm not going to necessarily say my role has changed. I think my voice means a little bit more now.
Yeah.
Just because now I'm one on the staff that's kind of been here for a little while. Stacy Cantley, she's been here. This is her fifth year. This is my fourth year. We have three new staff members this year. So I think just from like that seniority, understanding coach, knowing what she likes and things like that. So I just think that has kind of expanded things. She's very big on like that it's her role to grow her assistant coaches and things like that. So she's definitely, you know, giving me more things to do. I love where we work too. She's not a micromanager. She's like, listen, this is what I want you to do. You might not do it the way I would have done it, but as long as it get done, that's all that matters. And so that's been helpful too. And she's honest. So, you know, I had an internship. I'll never forget this. I had this internship. I was an accounting major at one point in time. And I had an internship, and, you know, halfway through the internship, I'm thinking I'm doing a great job, but I'm hearing from other people I'm not doing a great job. So I call a meeting with the supervisor, and I'm like, just be honest with me. Just tell me I'm not doing it. I'm not doing a great job. And I really, that ate at me, because I'm like, that's my name, you know, like, you could be honest with me, because I want to do well. And so I love that about Coach. You know, she'll be honest with me. She'll tell me where I need to sharpen up, things I need to get better. At the same time, when someone's honest with you, you believe them when they say you're doing well too. You know, so, yep. So yeah, it's been good. Now each year, I feel like there's more and more of expected of me. And again, for that competitive side of me, and just who we are as people, like that's been good for me also.
So I love what you said about the truth in communication. And oftentimes we've talked about that here on the podcast, the need for coaches to be truthful with players in terms of where they stand and how important that is. Mm-hmm.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
You bring up another aspect of it is you want to have that truth being able to be told amongst the coaching staff of, hey, you're doing what we need you to do, or hey, we need you to pick it up or step it up here.
Right.
And when you have that type of honest communication, again, that's how everybody gets better, right? If nobody's willing, to say, hey, we need to be better at this, or hey, you dropped the ball on that, then nobody knows. Everybody just kind of floats along and thinks, oh, everything's going great. And then nobody really improves and gets better. And if you're a person that thrives on getting better and has a growth mindset, then you want that feedback. Look, not everybody, we don't love to hear that, hey, you didn't do a great job. Nobody loves to hear that. But at the same time, right, if you want to get better, right, it's as a player, like players, the best players want to be coached. They want to be told. They want to be shown. They want to be helped because they want to grow and they want to get better. And I think it's the same thing in the coaching profession. When you have that kind of communication, it makes a big difference. Now, I got to ask you this. Mm-hmm. As the only male coach on your staff, you're in a female-dominated environment. So mm-hmm. I teach at an elementary school, so I'm in an environment where there's a couple other male teachers in my building. But for the most part, you know, my coworkers have always been and continue to be mostly female. So just as a male coach mm-hmm. in a female environment, what's that like? Do you think about that on a daily basis? Just what is that? How's your day-to-day in terms of making sure that you're building the kind of relationships with your fellow coaches and all those things when it's, again, it's sort of a unique situation that mm-hmm. not every male coach is in.
Right. Yeah, it is. It is a little different. But I don't know, Mike, I just look at people as people, yeah. you know? And yeah. so, and they let me be, you know, it's probably has more to do with them than me, you know,
sometimes they're like, yeah, it's just Durante, right?
Yeah, they let me be, you know? And again, I'm more of an introvert, you know, coach. Like when I first got here, cause again, like my door, even when I was at Lincoln, my door was always closed. Like that's just, I'm a door closed type person. And so, so coach, she'll be like, you know, you can open it every now and then, you know, could you unlock it just so I can, you know,
that's
so,
funny.
But I think I just have a good group. They let me be, I think from the beginning, they were very helpful and just, you know, Anya Covington, Stacey Cantley, Molly Hansen, like they were just big on just wanting to help me thrive. And so that's just kind of, I think it's our culture as a program. So again, I think maybe you drop me into a different situation with a different culture and it might weigh on me a little bit more, but we have good culture, to where I always say this, I want my stress to come from the work, not from the people that I work with. And I'm just in a good situation where, I mean, for COVID, we were down an assistant. The COVID year, we were down an assistant. We weren't able to hire a GA and we didn't travel with any managers. And it was not an issue. You know, no one complained. I only think we had a formal plan. We just went to work, you know. And so that's just kind of how I look at it. I look at it as people that, you know, that I rock with. And, you know, I can have them over to the house for dinner. They can have me over. We have a good time with one another. And so I don't really look at it, you know, any other way because, you know, they let me be the introvert that I am.
No, that makes sense. It makes total sense. I think that that's really what you want when you talk about your coworkers. It's you want to be accepted, respected for who you are and then reciprocate that respect. And that's where you really develop the kind of workplace that you want to be in.
day out, you know, day in, day out, and that gives you the opportunity to build those relationships with your coworkers and your staff. Talk a little bit about building relationships with players. As an assistant coach, what are some of the things that you do to try to build that rapport with the players so that you can push them and get the most out of them and really have those lifelong relationships that they're going to call you up 10 years from now?
Man, so I would say that's the biggest part of – I'll say that's why I love coaching, right? Like, I love basketball, but I don't love coaching because I love basketball. I love coaching because you get to just develop these relationships, man. Like, it's and it's at that college level, they're at this age where they're just figuring out a lot of stuff. And you're kind of there to help guide that. And honestly, Coach Rex, when I was at HCTC, she answered a question like the way I would have answered it about culture and building those relationships. And I think that's where I was like, you know what? I can work for somebody like that because they in this thing for the same reason I'm in this thing. So, you know, it's against that honesty piece. Right. I never forget Bill, not BJ Armstrong. He said, I think Tex Winter said, do you give me the permission to tell you the truth? You know, and so I think it's that piece. But just knowing like they just know that I care for them about who they are more than just a basketball player. And that's just who I am. I mean, that's just who I try to be as a person. And so I don't have like a formula of any or anything like that. You know, I'm honest with them. I encourage them when they need to be encouraged. I let them know when they can do better. But I love hearing about their family. You know, I love hearing about some of the things they got going on. I could be the hype man when they need me to be the hype man. And I think even as coaches, simple things as far as I remember when I was started out doing training and doing workouts with my players, and I never wanted them to like, if they were shooting, I didn't want them to rebound the basketball. Like, I wanted to go get it because it's like, that's me like serving you. Only thing I want you to think about right now is making these shots. It's my job to go get. Even now, I'll tell you, like, listen, I tell you, you're not going to get the rebounds. I go get the rebounds, you know? And so, kind of just trying to have a servant leadership, I guess, type mindset. I guess that's the way you could describe it. That I want to, you know, say, hey, I'm supposed to be your leader, but I'm willing to serve you. I'm willing to do everything I can to help you be the best version of yourself. And I think that just people that have been that to me, those are people that I still call today, people that I might write a letter to today. And so I want to, you know, I've been able to kind of have some of that same impact. Earlier this year, we were playing at Purdue Fort Wayne. And that point guard that I was telling you about, they hit that step back three.
Yep.
I coached her sister as well. And before the Purdue Fort Wayne game, all four of the sisters was there and the little baby were there. They surprised me and it brought tears to my eyes. Like I get the word of waterworks going, but it's stuff like that. I'm like, man, that's why I do this thing, because they just decided to surprise me. Like, that was something they thought of, you know, to make my day, you know, and I hadn't coached them since 2013. And here you talking like, you know, 9 years later, they showing up in Fort Wayne, Indiana to surprise their old coach, you know, like that, stuff like that, man. So I just trying to be that servant leader and just want them to know that, hey, I'm here for you and I'll do whatever I can to help you out.
Yeah, I think that building those kinds of relationships and putting your athlete first and making sure that they know that it's about them and it's not about you. And it's not always easy to do. But I think ultimately, if you go into it as a coach with the mindset of I'm here to serve my players as opposed to looking at it the other way around. And I think there's a lot more coaches today that look at it that way than maybe there were in the past. I think you think of like the my way or the highway type coaches and those coaches, there's fewer and fewer of them anymore because that style of coaching just doesn't work anymore. And today's athlete has a different – today's athlete just has a different perspective. And I think that when you look at building those relationships, when you talk about making sure that those athletes know that you're there to serve them, to be there for them, to help them be at their best, both on and off the floor, that's really where you start having success. And then you start having those stories like you just told that here's your athletes that are coming back years after you've coached them. And
letting you know that, hey, we appreciate everything that you did for us back when we were players. And that's really one, I think, one of the most special feelings as a coach. Yeah, without question. Tell me a little bit about the practice setting there at UWM and what you guys do in terms of practice planning and just how you go about preparing your team. Let's just take it, say we're in, or not right now, we're in the middle of the season, mm-hmm. and you're getting ready to prepare for a game. What's it look like on the practice floor as you're getting prepared for a game? How do you guys go about planning practice and then executing to make sure that you're ready for a game?
Yeah, it's that's where, so I've been to different college practices, and I've been to some practices where the assistant coaches don't talk at all. You know, they don't say anything. And that's not here, you know. So coach, she wants your idea. So we kind of collectively, you know, chime in when it comes to planning practice, things that we need to work on. And really, you know, a lot of our focus is on us. We really try to focus on who we are as a team, growing and developing our players individually and as a team. You know, we look at mid-major basketball. Development is a big part of you know, doing well. And so so when it comes to practice, we have some things that, like, hey, these are some things that we're going to do on a daily basis because this is the type of team that we want to be. And we're kind of a very detail oriented, like, scout based team as well. So, like, say, for instance, we'll start on our scout stuff maybe two days out for the game. And we're really hitting on, like, really a lot of times it's just personnel. We want to know, like, what they like to do. Because no matter what action they have, the player is going to revert to who they are as a player. And so that's really kind of a big part of how we go about things. And so we may do some personnel breakdowns with our practice guys. You know, they have to be a particular type of player or something like that, and really kind of work on that part of it. But really the most part of it, especially at this point in time in the year, is just focusing on getting, you know, Milwaukee better. And so we'll take a particular portion of practice, say, like, you know, we need to do a better job with our post passing or making a particular read or something like that. You know, we'll take some time, you know, whether it's individual position group work or it's a full team, you know, we do things like that to focus on that. And like I said, we do a lot of, like, position breakdown. So we'll do what we call guard post breakdown. We do that in the middle of practice as well, where everybody might take their own position group and they might be working on something different, or they might be working on the same thing, but you get more reps because it's less people. So yeah, I would say we're very development oriented, and we kind of split practice up. A lot of times it's going to be half defensive practice, half offensive practice, unless we got a lot to correct in a particular area. And then it might be, hey, practice guys, you're going to love playing offense today, you know? So, it might be one of those things that happen every now and then too.
How much film do you share with your players?
A lot. And so we share all our practices. We share game film with them. We share our scout film with them for them to be able to watch on their own. But then coach, the way she does it, we don't ever schedule out we allow 20 hours. We don't ever schedule out the whole 20 hours. And that's because we want to give players opportunities to get extra film sessions with their coach, their position coaches, and extra workouts with their coaches. So we might operate at like 16, like they might have an extra 4 hours in the week where they can do, you know, whether it's a shooting workout, it's a defensive workout, or like it's practice breakdown or game film breakdown, like whatever it is. So yeah, we do a lot. We do a lot, and we'll probably dive into it a little bit more because there's some details that we need to really get fixed. You know, this year, the previous years, it was a very it was an older team. And then with COVID, we had like seniors that came back for an extra year.
Yep.
And so with the new players, it was kind of like, y'all got to get in where you fit in because we're trying to win this championship, and we don't have time to rehash all the details with the older group. So now with this new wave, actually, like, now they've been dependent on to win games and things like that. You know, we gotta dive into the details a lot more. And not saying we weren't detail oriented. They just want as many foundational details. Now we got to get more to some foundational details because this group, they kind of had to, you know, they had to just go. They kind of got thrown into the fire.
Yeah, it's funny how different teams, right, have different needs when it comes to scouting and film work and how mm-hmm. much they can handle and how much they can't handle.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
think you talk to coaches and they're always like, you got to get a feel for your team and who they you are. Do. I think that's a big piece of understanding and being, I guess, adaptable, flexible as a coach to understand that, hey, this group can handle and benefit from watching a lot and having super detailed scouting reports. And then there's other groups that like you can share that stuff with them and it's flying over their head. And we're right, like, man, right. we might as well be talking to the wall over here because they're just going to go out and play and do what they do. So it's interesting how that whole thing kind of comes together. When you look at where you've been over the course of your career and where you are now and the different opportunities that you've had, if you could take one lesson that you could share with other coaches that are listening, one thing that you think has been the key to the success that you've been able to have, if you could boil it down, what would that one thing be?
Oh,
I know that's a tough one, man. That's really throwing you on the spot because there's a million there's a million things you could probably share.
I think probably a willingness to learn from others and trust yourself. So, you know, not thinking that you know so much that you can't learn from someone else, and then finding a way to like make that your own to where you are able to kind of maybe reject some advice because this is the way that you want to do it and having confidence in doing it. Because, you know, this basketball thing, different philosophies win, you know, like I remember being when I was at HCTC, one coach got up and spoke. The next coach that got up started out by saying, I would do everything different than the way he does it. So I think that's kind of been the thing, like just being willing to learn, being willing to hear from other people, you know, being in a place like IMG Academy. And regardless of what people might think about other people, don't let that affect my opinion of them. And I'm not saying that like within just the context of IMG Academy, I'm just saying that in life, period. And just being able to learn from people and then find a way to like make it your own, or morph it in what you want to do. And then being, when you do what you want to do, that you're confident in it. And that and you're okay with how the results, you know, end up because you're ultimately confident in what you're doing.
Confidence, not cockiness, right? I think there's a fine line there.
Yes.
And if you're confident, then you're willing to listen to other people and take their advice and grow from it. And yet at the same time, you're confident enough to be able to make your own decision if you disagree. Yeah. And I think that's really where you're coming from on that.
Yeah.
All right. We're coming up on an hour and a half, Durante. So I want to ask you one final two-part question.
Okay.
So part one, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as your biggest challenge? And then the second piece, when you think about what you get to do every day, when you get up out of bed in the morning, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
Okay, biggest challenge. If I'm 100% honest, biggest challenge is like what's next? Because, you know, I'm from the East Coast. My wife's from the East Coast. We've never lived around family. And, you know, I have an older daughter who lives in North Carolina. You know, she's ball as life. Her freshman year, I got a chance to actually go out and do some recruiting with her. That's cool. Last week. So I think the biggest challenge is just kind of, you know, navigating this career and trying to figure out what's next. You know, my wife loves it here. But at the same time, like I have goals, you know, like that head coach itch hasn't left, you know,
right. Yep.
That's just kind of, I've determined now that's just kind of who I am. And so like, I appreciate the autonomy that I have here. So I get, you know, to still make decisions and things like that. But, you know, my basketball mind is still going. So you just kind of, I still have things that I want to kind of do, that I want to play with, that I want to be creative. And you just have a different ability to do that as a head coach than an assistant coach. So I think that's probably like that the biggest challenge of just trying to figure out what that looks like and how I want to try to navigate that. And then what was the second part?
Biggest joy.
Biggest joy as it concerns like just...
I'd say professionally, because obviously we know your biggest joy comes from your family. There's no question that comes through loud and clear. So I don't think we need to clarify that. So let's stick with professionally.
Man, I love practice. It's my favorite part of the day. I just love practice. I do. Like, it's just like, no matter how I'm feeling, when we get in between them lines, you know, I might be like in a little salty mood even at the beginning, but boy, once them shoes start squeaking, that ball start bouncing, we start blowing the whistles. Woo! It just, I don't know. I really enjoy practice. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, this year I'm on the scout team a little bit more too. You know, coach got me, you know, having to do some stuff with the scout team.
Nice. All right. There you go. You get to lace them up a little bit.
Right. So I enjoy practice. I enjoy the process of getting better and seeing players kind of, you know, pushed and pulled in those environments and seeing them, you know, get better and then seeing it translate to the game. But, you know, you're not going to get that consistent performance in the game unless you see it in practice. And so that's, I get better in practice, you know? I love practice.
All right. Before we get out, that's well said. And I think that it's amazing to me always the number of coaches that talk about how much passion they have for practice and they like the games, but the practice environment where you can really, you're really teaching and you're really involved in teaching the game. That's what so many coaches love that piece of it. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a chance to share how people can get in touch with you, find out more about you and the program there at UW-Milwaukee. Start out, you can go social media, you can go website, you can go email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap it up.
So yeah, my Instagram and my Twitter, that's where I'm mostly on those two things. And they're the same at Coach D Polite. So Coach, the letter D, and then Polite. Also, Mike, if you don't mind me sharing, my wife and I came up with these journals, the Playbook Journal.
Yeah, absolutely. Which Durante was nice enough to share with Jason and I. They're fantastic. So go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So you can find those on gettheplaybookjournal.com. It's a great journal with basketball diagrams. We even come up with some football ones, got volleyball ones on the way as well. If you're in Texas, KBA Coach, they have them. And then a good friend of mine, Defense on the String, Jennifer Cepielli, they're on her website as well. So, that's it. And then, MKEPanthers.com. You know, we won the regular season conference 2 years ago, and so we're trying to get back into that battle to be, you know, make that run to the NCAA tournament this year. So you can check us out there. We got a fun group, and you know, we kind of play a little bit everywhere. So, you know, we always say if you're not from Wisconsin, it's best to be from Ohio, because if you're in Ohio, you can kind of get to a lot of all the way games. So, and we play in a fun league. The Horizon League is a really, really nice league.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Durante, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight. It's been a lot of fun getting a chance to hear about all the things that you've done in your career. And we really appreciate you taking the time. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.